The Music Business Worldwide podcast is supported by Volley Music, a leading financial management platform for the music industry. Volley enables you to track expenses, approve invoices, and make payments 24/7, 365 days a year. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest Music Business Worldwide podcast, supported by Volley Music, now known as Volley Entertainment. I'm Tim Ingham, the founder of MBW, and joining me on this podcast is Rusty Turek, the founder and CEO of PEX, which, amongst other things, tracks and analyzes copyrighted content on digital services. And it's by tracking that content that late last year, PEX discovered something rather shocking. According to its tech, over a million tracks on audio streaming services like Spotify, Apple Music, and Tidal are not what they appear to be. These million plus tracks are what PEX calls modified audio, and that means an original track has been sped up, slowed down, or otherwise manipulated, and then uploaded as an entirely new recording. The main issue for the music industry there is obvious. Unless these million plus tracks have been legally licensed on the original recording on which they're based, they're infringing copyright. More than that, they're pulling royalties away from the original artists in question because of the dominant pro rata streaming royalty system. PEX has provided a number of examples of sped up tracks that it's discovered on audio streaming services which aren't attributed to a song's original artist. That is crucial. I'll come back to it in a minute. For example, there's a version of Halsey's Without Me with over 6 million streams on Spotify. There's also a modified version of Coldplay and the Chainsmokers' Something Just Like This that has over 12 million plays on Spotify, and it's not very hard to find more. I took a sort of cursory search through Spotify before recording this, and I discovered a sped up version of Justin Bieber and Nicki Minaj's Beauty and a Beat that has over 8 million streams. I also discovered a sped up version of Lady Gaga's Bloody Mary that has over 25 million streams on Spotify. Again, in all of these cases, I said it was crucial before, and it is, the credited artist on each of these sped up or modified tracks, and therefore presumably the artist actually being accounted to by Spotify and collecting royalties from Spotify, is not the original artist in question. So Lady Gaga does not appear as a credited artist in the version of Bloody Mary with over 25 million plays. Now, we don't know 100% for sure, or at least I don't, whether the sped up tracks have been licensed by the original recording rights holder behind the scenes, although I'll say it's doubtful. And we don't know if some of these are actually sped up covered vocals, i.e. people who aren't Lady Gaga re-recording, and then they speed those up. In the case of the tracks PEX found, I'll just remind you that was the Halsey track and the Coldplay and Chainsmokers track. PEX say that is the original artist. It has been its original recording sped up. Another thing we don't know is if labels and artists are perhaps begrudgingly just leaving these tracks up on the likes of Spotify and Apple Music as they add to the kind of viral noise around a track. They have a promotional benefit. These sped up versions of tracks typically start finding virality on TikTok. That's become a big phenomenon, as you may have read about. And they often help an existing track, a slower track, or the original version of a track, find a new lease of life. There is a good example in 0207 Shake and Raise Escapism. I believe that came out at the top of 2023. There was a sped up version of that on TikTok that absolutely took off. But interestingly, the sped up version of Escapism, of Raise track, is findable on Spotify. But unlike the tracks I've mentioned previously, it actually credits Ray. That means she's getting paid when that track is played. So what's really interested PEX here, you know, they look at analytics and track the data, is the fact that the tracks that don't credit artists on audio streaming services are making it onto those audio streaming services at such a volume in the first place. Again, according to PEX's research, over a million of these copyright infringing modified tracks are already on these audio DSPs. They've been distributed onto those audio DSPs by third parties, presumably. So moving on to my interview with Rasty Turek. As you can hear in my discussion with him, he thinks this is a major music industry failing. That's before you even get to user generated content platforms. But just on those main audio streaming platforms, he thinks it's a major industry failing that we have a million plus modified tracks that don't seem to be crediting and therefore recompensing the original artists. And in Rasty's view, this is perhaps not quite streaming fraud, but it's certainly a sibling of streaming fraud and something on which action needs to be taken. Rasty Turek of PEX, welcome to the Music Business Worldwide podcast. You, as a company, have been putting out some really interesting research recently, which we're going to dig into fairly deeply over the next 25 minutes or so. But before we get there, I just wanted to go wider on this, which is, how does the research that PEX has been doing and its findings fit with a wider narrative in the music industry about streaming fraud? We've heard a lot about streaming fraud recently. We've heard a lot about it encompassed within the discussion around so-called artist-centric royalty models. So how does what you have found out fit within that conversation? And is some of what you found out being missed in that conversation?
Quantifying as a fraud is a little bit of a strong word for me, because I find this to be a part of the environment. I think when someone is trying to say, look, I have 10,000 listeners and 9,999 of them are done by bots, that's a fraud. Like, it's intentionally deceitful. One takes a song and speeds it up because they find pleasure, enjoyment in it. I don't think that's a fraud. I think that's a creativity of humans, as in any other part of the world. And so I will not quantify it as a fraud. That said, especially in artist-centric world where artists is paid based on how they are played, not properly attributing all of their content, regardless of their composition of that content. And I don't mean the musical composition, but I mean the setup essentially. It's damaging to the artist. From our research, at least 1% of all music has some kind of modified audio. And the existing systems are not catching that up. We are talking about all ACR or whatever other tools are out there. They're just not simply identifying this. So that means at least 1% of all music is misattributed and misappropriated in that sense. And on an artist-centric world, this means a lot of artists are essentially mispaid what they are played.
So when you say that at least 1% of plays on audio DSPs, so we're talking about Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc., actually be helpful if you mention some of the services that you've been monitoring. That's a significant amount of money. I know that you were hesitant to call it fraud, but that's a significant amount of money that's being, whether for naive reasons or otherwise, is being diverted away from legitimate rights holders. That's certainly how I would see it if I were, for example, Universal Music Group.
I see it the same way. Again, I think fraud requires a purpose to deceive. I don't think this anyone does it, or most people don't do it for that reason. We follow all sorts of services from DSPs and UGC, and this is fairly prevalent. And there is a huge following of people trying to essentially enjoy content like this, so nightcore mixes and so on and so forth. And I do think that there is a legitimate seat to the movement. Like, if people enjoy this kind of music, they should absolutely have access to it. But at the same time, proper attribution shall be required. And this is much more up to the platforms and services than it's up to the artists to essentially go and fish out.
What I think people will find shocking about your numbers more than anything else is, let's not go down the route of AI voice replication, because that's a whole other discussion. But, you know, when we see that happen, you see a voice replication of a Bad Bunny or what have you pop up on TikTok, or let's just stick with TikTok, but maybe if it popped up on SoundCloud, effectively UGC platforms, it's no great shock whether or not it gets taken down afterwards that it makes it up there. But what's shocking about your numbers here, just to reiterate, this is about sped up songs, so slightly different, but still manipulated audio, is that you're talking about what I would see as kind of super legit platforms whereby that UGC element isn't prevalent. And in fact, all of these tracks have to go through some kind of distribution middleman, if I've got that correct.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they are in a sense of UGC with the fact that they are provided by a user. And it also true that they generally have to go through a distributor. And in the current world, the distributors do generally the absolute minimum to verify, because the platforms themselves don't put any pressure on them to do any better. So even at 1%, while the number, the final number is huge, in tens of millions of dollars, it's still much smaller than the overall number of the pie. And so I think the platforms approach this as a kind of low importancy problem, and they generally don't focus on it. However, that shifts when you shift the payment models. So once you start focusing on an artist-centric model, that changes very significantly, because now you are explicitly excluding some payouts to the legitimate artist. And similar issue becomes with MLC, Mechanical Licensing Collective in the United States, and other services as such, because they have no easy way to make this identification. So they don't deal with audio. They only deal with metadata that are being submitted to them. So the composers, the writers are essentially even more, I will say, removed from that payout.
Where do you, in the first instance, lay the blame for this problem? It's a distributor problem. Ultimately, Pex's point, because you have the technology, at least you say you do, and I'm sure you do, you have the technology to identify this stuff. The suspicion or the takeaway that I'm getting from the messaging that I've seen from Pex is really distributors don't have the technology to do this effectively, and that's why it's ending up on the DSPs.
Well, blame is, again, a strong word, but I do think that this starts explicitly from the platform, from the DSP itself. If Spotify showed up and said, I don't care what kind of technology you have or you don't, this is required and you will be held accountable, it will adjust. The distributors do what the platforms require them to do. It's not that they every day think about it's like, how could I scheme my way around this? They try to run legitimate business and do exactly what they are asked to comply. The platforms, on the other hand, are the ones that are making payouts, and so they should be ultimately responsible for quality control. I don't care if you're using DSP or you have direct relationship with the user like YouTube does. It's your choice. It's your business model is your choice, and you are responsible for making sure the content is properly attributed.
Well, I was going to say we've seen in the artist-centric model from Spotify, but of course it doesn't refer to it as that. But it's pretty clear that there's been some influence, let's say, from the artist-centric model, as we've come to know it, on what Spotify's doing, what changes to its royalty model in the new year. As part of that, Spotify is going to financially penalize distributors who can prove have been adopting or benefiting from using streaming fraud. So would you encourage a DSP like Spotify to actually extend that and look to penalize, whether financially or otherwise, distributors who are actually caught or spotted uploading modified tracks whereby the due royalties aren't actually going back to the true rights holders?
I usually prefer approach of honey than the stick. And I do believe that both distributors and the DSPs are in the same boat, right? They want content to be distributed to the audience, and they want the best for the artist. I don't think anyone wakes up and says, how could I scam everyone around and how could I feed people off money, right? Like, I think they're really trying to do their best job. And I do think that this is a matter of motivation. If they say, it's like, look, we are shifting models to this and it's going to benefit your artist greatly to utilize technologies like this, because not only we will catch what we didn't caught before, but the same goes to your artist. Like, if your artist's content gets sped up, regardless who distributes it, it eventually gets paid properly back to you. It benefits everyone in process. And so I don't think Spotify needs to run around and essentially pointing finger at distributors and saying, it's your fault, it's your fault, and you are now going to pay me this or something. I think they can easily just say, it's like, look, this is a win-win situation, and we can all make this a better experience for both the artist and eventually the listener, because the listener now gets proper attribution metadata. So that means when you're looking for Taylor Swift's song and you want to hear it sped up, you know exactly where to look. Don't have to make up who knows what kind of queries to search. Like, you don't have to be part of these kind of culture somewhere deep in Reddit or somewhere else where you are fishing out these songs, you can explicitly find it because it's a legitimate piece of content.
This has come across my desk in recent days because DSPs have been putting out their end of year most popular tracks. And the most popular track on TikTok this year across all music is a song called Cupid by 5050. I don't know if you're aware of this, 5050, a South Korean girl group, but it's actually the Cupid twin version. I don't know what the twin version is, but I'm imagining that means there's an extra voice on it. So it's twin version, sped up version. Now, when you go to find that on Spotify, it does actually seem to be attributed back to their label in Korea. So there doesn't seem to be an issue there. But what it says to me is with TikTok having such an influence now, as we know they do, over consumption patterns on paid for audio platforms, the problem that you've highlighted is only going to get, from a music rights holder perspective, is only going to get worse because it's a cultural phenomenon that people want to manipulate audio, play with audio, speed up audio, and find an audience for that. Often as an act, as you pointed out, as a positive act of fandom, but I can't see it slowing down as a trend.
I cannot see that either. And obviously, sped up and slow down is only one layer of modification. You started talking about AI voices and others, and they're all contributing to this. And I don't have any exact numbers because I cannot read the future, but it does point to a significant increase, both from the fandom perspective, but also because it's so easy, right? The tools are not very available. One can really easily download a song, speed it up, or change certain parts of it and return it back to the services. This is going to become a fairly significant portion of the experience. And so maybe, you know, within the next few years, we can see up to 10% of content to be in some form or shape modified. And that will imply that if you extrapolate, heavily extrapolate in the music industry that is trending towards $80 billion annually, that could be fairly significant amount of money sifted away from legitimate artists to someone else. And ultimately, that's what we are talking about here. Whose pockets are going to be lined up with this money? Because the one of the unfortunate truths of the music industry is essentially what cannot be attributed properly gets distributed based on market share through black boxes, especially in the publishing side. And so that means someone else is getting your money. And so this definitely needs to start shifting, especially as artist-centric models are becoming now commonplace and are dominating all of the services, are slowly becoming the dominator services. And so my hope is that, again, this will be rather positive incentive to all to adopt the tools and services that essentially help them to properly attribute the content. And eventually, this will become part of the experience, because who doesn't want that for their audience? The audience shall always be as satisfied as possible. So instead of trying to remove content or block content of certain size or certain type, we shall absolutely help to create it if that's what the audience desires, but also attributed back correctly to the right person.
The number of things are coming to mind as you say that. I mean, the first thing to say, which I'm sure there'll be an article that accompanies this, and I've probably said it on the introduction to this podcast, I imagine, is that this is, PECs have highlighted some individual tracks and examples of this modified audio that has been incorrectly attributed on the recorded music side, let alone the publishing side. That's already got 10 million plus, 12 million plus plays on Spotify, continually going up. I'm sure there's probably one over 15. I haven't looked at it since the time that you've done the research and the time we've recorded this podcast. You know, if there's 100 tracks that are doing that, that starts to become significant. If there's 1,000, tens of thousands of tracks that start to rack up those kind of numbers, that really does nibble into the market share of a Universal Music Group or a Sony Music or a Warner Music, etc. So there's that part. This is a serious problem with significant examples. The second is, are you hopeful that motivations are coming together here to fix this kind of issue? When you hear Universal Music Group speak about artist-centric royalty models and the amount of thought and experimentation that is going into those models, and when you see a company like Spotify turn around and start to announce policies that fit with that mindset, do you think it's kind of inevitable that this problem will get fixed?
I mean, we clearly have the technology right now. I am very biased, obviously. I built this company, but we probably have the technology to solve this. I'm pretty sure we are not going to be the only ones. And so this is not a technical problem. This is purely a matter of incentives. So if someone in the process and the someone shall preferably be the DSP starts going after this problem, then it will be solved. And it's not a critical problem in a sense of, oh my God, what we are going to do about this, like it's AI voice generation, because that is a very difficult and very different technical problem. This is not a difficult and technical problem. And so I do believe, as everything in the past points out, that eventually all problems that grow to a certain size get solved if the technology is available and possible. I believe that this one will be solved as well.
Well, may I compliment you first and foremost, because you didn't plug PEX any point in this discussion up until the end there. So, and I think that was entirely warranted. And I should point out, I will have you back on the podcast if you'd like to come on, because we're talking about something very specific today. But MBW has been reporting on PEX highlighting certain figures around user-generated content on YouTube, for example, for a long time, which was a big flashpoint, as you know, in the music industry conversation. So I'd love to dig deeper into the other thing that PEX is up to. But for now and for today, Rusty Turek, thank you so much for joining us on the MBW podcast.
Thanks for having me.